and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 578.
Venom Cast.
Perhaps the last Venom Cast.
It's the last dance. I finally saw a movie.
and not 4 months after the fact.
Yeah. Finally saw a movie. Saw actually as we record this last night, Tuesday night, the 29th. I like with all movies, you know, you usually do them without me, even if I haven't gotten a chance to see it. So I'll leave it to you, man. Where do you want to start with movies?
I always do this, even when it's your damn movie.
Well, yeah, but I don't know where we start. Like, are we talking plot? Do we want to like even break it down, or we want to talk about like initial react? Like, I don't know where we would want to start with these.
How about just overall thoughts, Chad?
Overall thoughts. It's good. I thought it was good for what it was. There's something I can't, with a possible exception, or you know, partial exception of the first Venom movie. There's something about Venom movies of our example of this trilogy that I can't quite put my finger on, like almost like they succeed in spite of themselves. Like I keep looking at like, you know, certain sequences or certain, you know, choices in dialogue and stuff like that. And the cheesier, the stupider lines that, no, it's not like they're, you know, there's a bunch of them to pick from, but some of the choices that are made are such like, man, this wouldn't really succeed in any other movie, would it? And I can't pinpoint anything in particular, but there's something about the Venom movies where you watch them and you're just like, if this was a different POV character or not set in this universe, this would be a worse movie than it is. And I'm not trying to shit on it. I'm just saying that there's this air about these movies that of I don't know, maybe coincidence or what, where the way things unfold is a little too crazy. That being said, it was fun to see a bunch of symbiotes at the end. I do wish we would have gotten that a little bit sooner. Not necessarily like, you know, as early as halfway through the movie or whatever, but just a little bit sooner, just to spend some more time with those symbiotes. Here's a good example of what I mean in terms of it just being coincidence and we just accept it and swallow it because it's stupid and funny. Mrs. Chen being in Vegas in that whole sequence. She did nothing. She provided nothing. But because it's the last dance and we're saying farewell to these characters, we have to have Mrs. Chen because she was in the first two. Right. So like that's something that was like completely unnecessary, if we're being honest. So there's that. No, as a fan of the symbiote world and the expansion that it got during King in Black, I am both happy to see Null this soon and upset to see him this soon. I think he's a really, really big character to bring out. And I'll talk more about this later on in the actual episode, but like Null is Necron. So to bring Null, what was that? Because it was happening as I was living here. So it's had to have been in the last 4 years. So was it like 2021, 2022? That was King in Black, right?
You know you're asking the wrong person to give you that without me Googling it. The reality is.
Yeah. So Null has only been around maximum 4 to 5 years.
So it's 2020 to 2021.
Yeah. So he's for him to be the level of threat that Null is, I don't know. It just seems a little haphazard to bring him in. But I also thought for how we saw him and how we saw him used, I thought he was well utilized for his thing. But like, again, there's pieces of his character or his portrayal that just also don't make sense, which we'll get into. But I think that kind of points to my overall thoughts. There are lots of things that I thought, oh, wow, they did that. Did they do it right? But I didn't hate how they did it. So I guess it's better than I thought it would be. And I also really didn't, to be honest, I think the worst part of the movie was the ending, if I'm being honest. That little weird montage thing at the end and staring out over the bay and just the, I don't know. I didn't like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You look at this, I'm not sure where this one ranks in the three for me. I mean, I probably would lean towards, I suppose, it being like the third worst of the, I mean, the third best. So it would be the worst, but the third best, I think. But I don't know. It's weird. I thought the relationship between Eddie and Venom worked best in this movie. That was the thing that it had going for it.
Yeah.
The story itself was, you know, I mean, they're bringing in Null and you would think that would be something bigger, but, you know, you barely get to see anything with Null at all in the entire movie. And it's clearly just setting up something down the road that Sony wants to do and arguably Sony and Marvel will do together. But either way, that, you know, so, and you have all these symbiotes and it's also interesting in this movie, it seems like they pretty much, they go back to pronouncing it the way I always did, which was symbiotes. Yeah. Symbiotes.
Yeah.
Since it would make sense. Symbiotic relationships, symbiotes. Yeah. That the reality is, it was cool seeing all those different symbiotes bonded, even though most of that was like for like 2 minutes. There's only a few that lasted any longer, and they seemingly killed some of them off, most of them off. And like the tracking dog things were a little too powerful. I thought that was ridiculous. I don't know. I thought it's weird. It's like the movie itself, if you really look at the bulk, which is funny because this story was out there for a while that the actual movie was only going to be like about an hour and a half. But then you see the movie or you look at the movie when you're going to get your tickets and it says it's like an hour 50 something. It's like, oh, that's wrong. But it really isn't wrong because there's literally like about 20 minutes of credits.
Yeah.
And so overly long listing of credits considering. I don't know why. I mean, you're not trying to shortchange people, but friggin' Endgame and movies like that don't have 20 minutes of credits. So why should this movie have 20? I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
Plus the post credit scenes are all but useless in the big picture. But it was, I don't know. Sony makes a lot of odd choices and stuff. And I know that's not like, it's not anything new. Me say, that's like preaching to the choir saying that about Sony. But you would think if you're going to bring like, have like Risa Fonz in the movie, you think he's going to be playing a variation of Kurt Connors, but he's not.
Yeah.
And you have, what's his face? I never can pronounce his name. Mordo, but he's not playing Mordo. He's playing an entirely different character. So it's like, and yeah, it's not like it's a cardinal sin that you're committing here, because we all know it's already firmly established in the MCU and everything else, that alone in the MCU alone, that you can have characters and that look exactly the same and be different. And you can have different people play different versions and characters look completely different. So it's not like it's a faux pas. It's just that it's really weird when some of these characters are, we've seen a lot of these characters recently. It's weird to kind of be doing that. That's just kind of Sony being Sony, I suppose. I thought I missed Michelle Williams in this movie. I thought that was quite interesting that they even for like a 2 minute cameo that they couldn't get Michelle Williams back for this.
Mm.
I did like that they literally picked this movie did literally pick up right after the end of the last movie and including and right along with the little ever so brief trip into the MCU verse before Eddie and Venom get sent back, that this movie picks up pretty much right after the last one ended and right after that scene that we
which helps clarify some stuff that we were worried about that they were biting themselves in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that part I thought that part was, I did like that. I mean, for the most part, I thought the special effects were good. I don't know. It's interesting. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It's just, I don't know. I just think that it would be really interesting to see how a lot of other people who like the first two movies view this one. I'm kind of getting the opinion that probably most people are not overly enthusiastic about this one or less enthusiastic about it compared to some of the others. But it's not like it did absolutely fantastic, certainly domestically, box office wise. Yeah. So it is interesting that considering how well the last one did, you know, still when, because the last one was the one that absolutely put the final nail in the COVID coffin that people were still hanging on to. Nothing's going to bring people back to the theaters until like the $90+ million opening. It's like, well, now we can shut the hell up about that because.
Yeah. So maybe we should start there in terms of going back a few points to the symbiote piece that was left over in the MCU. So it's pretty clear that it's anything but, it would seem that Venom left a shedding of himself in the MCU at the bar and then in his home universe at the bar. That's what it seems like because, if anything else, there's no coin next next to it or whatever. It feels like the symbiote shedding that was left on the bar Mordo captured is not the same as what was in the universe. Plus what he says, and I spent some time trying to see if I could find what he actually says, but he says briefly something about how symbiotes leave sheddings of themselves all over the place in an attempt to survive. So that would also indicate this is not the first shedding of Venom out there. And plus the one that he captures sets up, you know, one of the end credit things. So I'm thinking the MCU shedding is back on the table. That's my read of it.
It's open to interpretation that way. I mean, I think in a way they try to make it sound or seem like the shedding that we saw, that we assumed was left in our universe, all of a sudden now wasn't left in our universe. But anything's possible. And the reality is, like you touched upon, the odds are there's other pieces of Venom floating around, which also is the out, which is also which makes perfect sense when Venom says to Eddie that, I forget how he phrases it, but this is just, you know, this is just like goodbye for now.
Yeah.
That the reality is that there's probably a piece of Venom, enough pieces, or at least a piece, functional piece of Venom alive, which means Venom is still alive, especially since they have a hive mind anyway, which means that at some point, whether it's in Secret Wars or somewhere down the road, if they wanted to do Tom Hardy being Venom again, they could.
Yeah. And you know, I was talking about the ridiculousness of Mrs. Chen and stuff like that. A couple of other points, and I pointed this first one out during when the trailers were happening. The inconsistency that in the first movie, when Venom climbs to the top of that tower in San Francisco and the plane flies above him and the sound and everything of the plane and the jet engine and everything else causes the symbiote to react because of the weakness to sound waves. But yet he's riding on the side of a plane and completely unaffected by it at the beginning ish of this movie. The other inconsistency, I would say, is the symbiote host compatibility idea, because in the first movie, the symbiotes were, you know, kind of burning through hosts because the compatibility had to be there. Yet in this one, it seems like, hey, whoever's nearby will do. But maybe that's just simply because, you know, they're only hosts long enough to fight. But it would seem like an extraneous use of the symbiote host power in terms of like not just like healing the host, but like becoming a full suit over them and using their individual symbiote power would be more of an exercise of energy, thus burning through their host faster. So it seems to me like the whole you have to be compatible with your host thing was forgotten, but I don't know, because we didn't see them long term enough, right?
Yeah, it could have just been any port in the storm, considering the circumstances, and also like the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. Because maybe a massive spin is too much hyperbole, but they certainly do a spin on this movie, trying to make it sound like, hey, you know, the symbiotes were like they're really good guys all along.
There's that. But they also say, because I was reading up, because I was trying to find an article that would tell us which of the symbiotes those were, because there have been so many symbiotes in Marvel comics that to recognize them simply by color is just kind of insane. But they say that Mulligan's, Detective Patrick Mulligan bonds with the symbiote offspring of Carnage at the end of that movie. That's correct, right? We remember that.
Yeah.
In the comics, Carnage's offspring is Toxin. They say in this movie that the original symbiote left him for dead and he was collected by this Area 55 place. And then they gave him a new symbiote to bond with, saving his life. So maybe the host thing is in play. Maybe or Toxin didn't have enough energy to fully restore Mulligan. I don't know.
Yeah,
it contradicts itself somehow in its own film.
You just have to assume they have bigger plans for Toxin, and they didn't want him to get involved at all in this mess. And I don't mean in a negative way. I just mean in the mess that they were going to have to be dealing with, like at Area 51, that they didn't want to be able to potentially explain how Toxin's not off the board. So that's probably the only reason why.
Yeah, the only two symbiotes I would say of any merit here. First of all, the secondary symbiote that is host to Mulligan, the serpent like one that we is our POV kind of, you know, what's the guy? You know, warning us that the British are coming.
Paul Revere.
Yeah, our Paul Revere of the story. That's not a symbiote I recognize, nor apparently does anybody else. But the doctor, Dr. Payne, apparently I'm just reading through the article. The actress is Juno Temple. Her symbiote, the purple one that gives her super speed, that's Agony, which is interesting because her last name is Payne. So Payne and Agony, that was always a thing in the comics. And then Sadie Christmas plays host to Lasher. So when Lasher died, I was like, oh man, that sucks, because I recognize Lasher, but that kind of sucked, because I didn't feel much of an attachment to the Sadie Christmas character, but the way that she bonded with Lasher and like, you know, when they were separated that first time before Lasher died, because they were separated twice, right?
Yep.
The way she was like, she felt like disconnected and she was like, no, I need her back and like stuff like that. The instant connection that Sadie felt with Lasher and the relationship briefly that she had with her, I don't know, something about that. I almost immediately bought it to where I was kind of sad when Lasher died.
Yeah, I would, for the most part, I would agree. I would say that was a pairing that I liked. And I know they didn't give that character much to work with in the movie, but I kind of didn't like her because she obviously was a lot more sympathetic to the cause here, as opposed to just, you know, the military aspect of just basically do your job and shut up and move on and don't get attached to anything or any, you know, that I like the fact that really wasn't her MO. And she, and even with helping to get Venom, she's the one who carried Venom, wasn't it, back to Eddie?
Yes.
So I thought that was cool, and I did, and I thought I thought visually that was a nice combination. So yeah, I was disappointed. Now who knows? And of course, seemingly they can come up with any explanation for any character not being around, so or not being dead, especially the symbiotes. But yeah, I would agree with you. I thought of all the ones they introduced, just in the last 20 minutes of the movie, that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, Dr. Payne's story throughout the movie was strange to me because it all seemed it all obviously is leading up to the payoff of her bonding with Agony, but that happens so last minute that it almost makes me uncertain of the point of her character until then, because she doesn't bond with Agony except towards the very end. Except in an effort to get her and Sadie out of there. So Agony doesn't play a really big part. Dr. Payne doesn't really technically play a big part. Like, she's there with the general or whatever when he's dying, but he is the one who sets off the acid. Like, what does she do? Like, she's there to communicate with the whatever the nameless symbiote is inside Mulligan. But I mean, honestly, couldn't that have just been done by the Sadie character? Like, I don't understand why we spent so much time focusing on the origin of Dr. Payne.
Yeah, I just assumed the character was more relevant to the mythology, but I wasn't quite sure why there was so much of an investment in her origin story with her brother and all this too. I didn't quite understand that.
Well, apparently she's a character, kind of an offshoot of a character that exists in the comics called Dr. Thaddeus Payne. And Screen Rant says this is a villain of both Venom and Moon Knight. So I know you know a little bit more about Moon Knight than I do. So I don't know if you know who Thaddeus Payne is, but maybe that was her brother that died. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, setting up a symbiote and their origin and stuff like that, that's cool. But if the symbiote plays no role in the movie, then I don't know. It's strange. It's also strange, too, because if this symbiote, you spend so much time setting up its host's origin and then the connection to this host and the symbiote at the end of the film. Don't get me wrong. Agony was rendered really well. The addition of the super speed thing with the lightning crackling and all that, like, that was really cool looking, but there's almost no point in spending that much time building up someone like Agony. And if you're not going to use them, other than your only other point would be to use them later on in a future film. So I don't know what Agony could be used for, but also the kind of the same thing is what I was thinking about Null, right? So they spend a lot of the movie going, okay, if Null gets the codex, that releases him from his prison inside Clintar. But then at the end, Null says, and I went ahead to look this up because you could hardly understand some of his words at points. I don't know if your showing was the same, but there was some of the way the VFX was rendered. Some of his words were a little garbled. I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. It wasn't as crystal clear.
Yeah, he says, your champion has fallen, the king in black is awake, your world will burn, and you will watch. Which sounds like somebody who's like, I'm free, you know, like, so your champion has fallen. What do you mean the champion? Just because he had the codex? I don't understand, like, you spent the entire film saying Null's really going to only be a threat here if the codex exists to be found, and if one of them dies, the codex no longer exists, which keeps him imprisoned, and therefore he's no longer a threat. But then you end the movie with an end credit going, no, Null is still a threat.
It was kind of odd. It was an odd setup for obviously something Sony really wants to do.
Yeah. Just to explain to people at home, yes, Null, and I wasn't going to spend a ton of time on this, but Null is, and if you saw the movie, the way they explained it in the movie is enough to tell you this. Null is Necron in the Marvel Universe, essentially. He existed before the light, and then the light comes into the universe, and he wants to return the universe back to the void it was before. in the Marvel universe, apparently, and I'm just going to quote this here so I'm not getting lost. He was awakened when the Celestials invaded his kingdom of darkness with light. And then the first symbiote that he created, because he's the god of the symbiotes, the first symbiote he created was that sword, the Necro Sword or whatever you want to call it. And he used that sword to decapitate one of the Celestials when he was fighting back, and used the power in the body and the head of that Celestial to sort of infuse the blade in himself with more power. So, like, we're talking cosmic level threats here. So, yeah, the Null and the King in Black are two different things. The King in Black is a role given by the Celestials according to this, and Mark, you know more about the Marvel Universe than I do, to be honest. The King in Black is a cosmic caretaker appointed by the Celestials to serve as the correlative counterpart of the Beyonders. While the Kings in White maintain the multiverse from beyond with the Light of Concordance, the King in Black is charged with maintaining it within using the power of Living Abyss. King in Black is connected to the realm of the Unbeyond. I don't know. That part of King in Black was the actual story arc was a little crazy to me, but apparently it's a mantle. So, yeah. The first symbiote, this is cool too, because this was revealed in some issues, I think, of Thor. The first symbiotes that were charged to kind of go out into the universe were like these symbiote types of dragons, which you see in the King in Black story proper. And they go out and they are fighting against Odin in them. Thor and Odin in them strike some of them down, but they sever their connection with Null. And in their disconnection from Null's like kind of hive mind, their experiences and stuff and proximity to like some of the Norse gods and things like that lead them to kind of be imbued with concepts like honor and nobility. And they turn that's why they turn on Null and trap him in Clintar. Because Clintar is just the throne place of Null, but it's basically a big ball of symbiote energy just restraining him at the core. So it's not even Clintar in most modern iterations is not even an actual planet in terms of how we think about a planet. It's a secondary. It's just basically a planet sized ball of symbiotes that are all kind of living and thriving and, you know, containing Null at its core, which I thought it did a pretty good job of representing that in terms of visually.
Yeah, I would say so.
How did you feel about all the cosmic? Because like we keep cutting back to Null. It's so weird because we see the sword. So that's not that. Then that can't be the same sword that what's his name has in Eternals, right? Because that's supposed to be the same sword in terms of Marvel continuity and stuff.
In the Eternals.
Remember the Eternals, the Black Knight character.
Oh, the Black Knight.
The blade that he has, the Necro Sword, is supposedly the same thing. In terms of Marvel comics, it's the same thing.
Well, there's always, first of all, it's a different Earth.
Yeah.
But it's also the fact that we don't have real context for how things work from a time perspective either. I mean,
yeah.
But I think the fact that it's a different Earth probably is a whole, that's a whole ball of wax.
I think I might be getting confused. I think what I'm thinking of is the sword that
God Butcher used.
Yes,
that's why I was sitting in silence for a few seconds because I'm thinking this is what is he talking about from the Eternals? That's the only thing I thought of, unless there was something in some celestial weapon that I didn't pay attention to that was irrelevant as far as them doing anything with it. But I was thinking, does he mean Gore the God Butcher? And that depends again. That's completely the same thing though. It's different worlds, and it's also a timeline. You don't know when things. So yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called the All Black. The All Black is a powerful Necro Sword. It's the first symbiote taking the shape of a sword. Okay. Yeah, I thought that at one point in the comics, I'm not gonna sit here and look up things anymore. But like, I thought at one point they connected the Black Knight's sword. The Ebony Blade? Is that what they called it?
I think that's right.
I thought at one point they connected the two. Okay, whatever. I enjoyed it, but the ending with the montage, the quiet look over the pier, I'll remember you, buddy, like that whole thing. Maybe that's just based on my experience because my theater had a lot of people in it. I wouldn't say it was sold out, but it was definitely had more people than I thought for Tuesday night. My theater was quiet, not like I was expecting standing applause or anything, but it just felt like a room full of people not knowing how to react and going like, oh, is this the end?
Yeah, the plot for what it was, it did seem rather, I don't want to say uneventful, though you could make a case a lot of what happens in the movie is uneventful to the very end, that it seemed like you were going to have higher stakes, even though they're hinting at it being higher stakes coming down the road. But in the actual movie, there is a tie between the Ebony Blade and Null. I'm trying to read the summary of it, and it's not really something to do with Merlin and everything else. But yeah, so you're not wrong that there is some tie. There is some tie with the Ebony Blade, though it does not. But it's still not. But it's not the. It's not the Necro Sword itself. According to the Dark God Null, the Ebony Blade is a symbiotic divine weapon with the potential to destroy worlds, and its true power is beyond the ability of mortals to comprehend or unleash.
Mm.
So obviously they did tie it into Null once Null came on the scene.
Mm. Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of like maybe box office or reception or critical reaction?
Well, I mean, which is funny because somehow I lost my sight, and by looking up other things, I lost my Box Office Pro, which I will get back. Yeah, from a financial perspective, this movie overseas it did okay. I mean, it did. But domestically, it really, overall, right now, worldwide, Venom has done 182.6, with 124 of that coming overseas. So the good news for this is that the movie is being saved to a large extent by its overseas business. Domestically, however, it only had a $51 million opening in its opening weekend. As we record this on the Wednesday before Halloween, it's only up to 58.6. So it's definitely not making a lot of money. And I think that's pretty disappointing considering, you know, the last one had the last one dropped a lot, but the last one did have a really, really big opening. So I think that's a little disconcerting, I think, from a Sony perspective, because even though certainly the international box office is helping, you know, it's certainly helping with this movie, but I don't, but let's see, what was the budget on this movie was supposedly 110. So as we speak, it hasn't even made two times its production budget yet, but it's still, but that's almost a given that it'll do that. The question is, can it at least do three? Which, of course, if you get to that point, it should break even, which they should. The reality is they should not lose money on this. This shouldn't be like a Morbius or anything else, but it is a little the interesting thing is budget wise, they've kept this franchise under control. That the first one was 116 and the last two were 110. So they actually have at least been smart on that front, that they have not gone batshit crazy and started overspending like a lot of franchises do as the franchise goes on. But it is a little disturbing that you went from an $80 million opening to a $90 million opening to a $51 million opening. And both of the previous Venom movies made over $213 million domestically. So that's probably all but guaranteed not to have a chance in hell of this movie coming close to that. Even if you want to be generous than me, I guess maybe it could do like around 150, 170 if everything fell into place. Plus the worldwide box office in the last two movies, the original two were 856 and then 501 respectively. So this movie still has a lot of heavy lifting to even come anywhere close to the last movie worldwide. So this movie is definitely going to underachieve. So maybe they are getting out of the main Venom business at the right time.
Maybe. I noticed they spent a lot of money on marketing. Because I saw Venom kind of everywhere. I get that that's targeted marketing, you know, to a geek like me. So like, you know, almost anything, you know, nerd related is going to somehow cross my feed, whether I'm on YouTube or TikTok or social media or whatever. But I noticed like a lot of like, you know, like Venom showing up in Hot Ones, you know, in eating some chicken wings or whatever, like, you know, various advertisements and things like that, or, you know, taking a selfie with a tongue out and that kind of becoming a thing with various celebrities or something like that was strange. Also, didn't this movie have a pretty weird, extensive, like, limited edition thing in terms of like multiple different theaters had like either a specialty cup or a specialty popcorn bucket or like, and it's not just like, you know, it wasn't just like Regal, right?
No,
Regal had one and Cinemark had one and like, it was crazy.
Yeah, I actually got the cup. I got the Regal cup, which I liked, which is just the goop, the Venom goop all over it. And it just kind of forms Venom's face on the top of the cup. I did get that. Because sometimes they only sell those. They sell those only in combos, but you have to get the bucket and the cup together, which it's fairly common that they do that. But luckily this time they didn't. Well, maybe not for my wallet, luckily, but they wouldn't have gotten anything out of me from that perspective if I had to buy it all. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like I said, it would have saved me money if they only sold them in the combo, but I figured I would ask because I kind of actually saw one or two people that just had the cups, but they weren't carrying the Venom head container, which at least they're kind of smart now that at least when they sell things like that, that at least they still give you an extra, because most people will not want the popcorn actually in the container, not just because you probably would get screwed anyway. You wouldn't get enough as much popcorn as you would in a normal large bucket, but at least they're, people wouldn't want to get dirty. A lot of people aren't going to even open it. So I think I do think it's cool that certainly at Regal does that. You just get a regular large tub of popcorn. They give you a large bucket if you get the Venom combo, and you can keep the Venom bucket in the bag, and they fill up the cup, of course. But that's obviously becoming a big thing over the last year and a half, more than before. That's become a big thing for all these movies to have their tie-ins and.
Well, yeah, but this one was weird because it had multiples, because like Regal, you had like the Venom head with the open mouth and you could see like parts of his red jaw as the symbiote like mouth stretched open and the teeth at the top. And then you were talking about your cup. I'm assuming you're talking about the all black cup with the black lid with Venom's face on it.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I wanted to grab one of those. That's cool. but also advertised, Regal had, did you see the two Venom figures? Like the statues or whatever.
Yeah, because what was the other? What's the other? Is that anti-venom?
That's anti-venom. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Which
those are are controller holders. You put like your gaming controller on in their hands.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they probably did have those too. They probably were selling them, but sometimes that's not. Just in general, I just noticed over the last 6 months or so that's. It's starting to become much more of a cottage industry, because even with the t-shirts, they're selling t-shirts and they're selling pops. Mm. And I mean, some stuff, I mean, for some movies, it's cool. Like a lot of people were buying the Book of the Dead thing, the handbook for the recently deceased for Beetlejuice. Mm. And that was kind of cool. And obviously when Alien Romulus came out, the plastic container that they had, which had LEDs in it, it lit up. That was had the face huggers in it. That was kind of cool. It was like $30, but it was kind of cool. I didn't get it, but it was kind of cool. Just because you could do, I mean, I would never put popcorn in it, but you could put a lot of other stuff in it. I mean, so you could use it as a. But it's obviously become a much bigger industry over the past year. It seems when it's. They've kind of realized that, so that's why almost every major release is going to have some kind of bucket or some kind of cup or some kind of other exclusive. Like you said, they have statues, like they had the baby pool sitting in a chair thing that Regal was selling, because I remember tons of people were buying that when on opening night for Deadpool and Wolverine. So it is.
Well, it's not just that. For this one, it seemed like a bunch of different places had exclusive, not just like the Regal, because I saw, and this one's not saying like it's specific to Cinemark or whatever, but I'm seeing one where like
it looks like your standard souvenir cups and popcorn buckets where like they're just what they are, but they have prints on it of characters or title treatment from the movie. There's even a symbiote cup where it's a translucent cup, but it looks like the symbiote, you know, when it's in its symbiote form, like when it's just all stringing and stuff, it's kind of stretching across the plastic cup. And then there's another Venom popcorn bucket head where the mouth is closed and it's just a more traditional Venom where the eyes go more up to like the head. And then I'm seeing an image of a popcorn bucket that looks a lot like your cup, where like the entire popcorn bucket is black and goopy, and then Venom's head kind of, you know, when Venom talks to Eddie and he just kind of comes off of his shoulder and stretches. Yeah. It's that same thing, but coming off the top of the popcorn bucket. So I'm seeing like a lot of different places doing different exclusives for the movie, which I thought was crazy. Like, cause that's not just something that they do, right? That's something they have to like, that's part of the marketing budget for the film, isn't it?
I don't necessarily think it's part of the, I don't think it would be part of the marketing budget because it's usually, because it's promotional, but it's like, usually that's when you partner with somebody. So I'm sure Regal, I don't think they paid Regal to do that. I think Regal's more likely to pay them to do, to have some exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought the Venom controller, by the way, the Venom controller holder. I found it on eBay and I picked it up. But I can't find the anti-Venom one anywhere. I would prefer the anti-Venom one. I have a special place in my heart for anti-Venom. Have you seen the image of the controller holder? Just anti-Venom looks cooler. I'm sorry. He just looks cooler.
Yeah, I've seen them. I at first I didn't realize, but that's what they were. I first thought they were just toppers for a different cup.
Yeah.
But yeah, both, at least at the moment, on the regular Regal site, I know they both the Roaring Head bucket and the Last Dance cup both are sold out.
Yeah. I was able to confirm that other head popcorn bucket is indeed Cinemark. So
yeah. That actually would make sense because, like I said, this has just been, even Godzilla and Kong, they had a lot of stuff like that. Some cups and some buckets were cooler than others, and some were not. So it depends. It really does depend.
Yeah.
But yeah, the most. Anti-Venom has a good look, period.
I did see that part of the marketing beforehand because whenever they do these, you know, get your popcorn bucket or whatever, they just flash all the merchandise they're selling. And I saw Anti-Venom sitting right there next to Venom. And I was like, there's no way Anti-Venom is in this movie. Because that's what it made me think of. Like, of course. I should have known better because the Venoms that's pictured here clearly has the Spider-Man symbol on their chest. So like, you know, that's a different rendition of Venom, but like, I was so convinced seeing that every time a new symbiote popped up, I was like, is this Anti-Venom? Cause I kept looking, cause Anti-Venom is a very specific symbiote. There's a very specific creation, and I'm not going to get in. I already got into the creation of Null. Like, I'm not going to get into the whole Anti-Venom thing, but Anti-Venom is a very specific symbiote. So changing their origin to just be like a regular symbiote along with all the others that just so happened to be in the crowd, would have been crazy, but I still would have loved to see him on the screen.
No, I can certainly understand that.
Yeah, I thought, you know, for a minute, I thought they were going to do something where, like, they either cloned Venom or they did something because, you know, who knows what the hell they have going on in that Area 55 lab. They do something to the symbiote while it's detached from Eddie to turn it into Anti-Venom, which allows them to get around the whole Codex thing. Like, my mind was going crazy trying to figure out how Anti-Venom was going to be involved.
There's always another day.
For sure. All right. Anything else about this film? Feel about it as an ending to this trilogy, supposedly, because they do so much setup here at the end of this stupid film to be like, and we're going to see more symbiotes in the future. But like, they made it very clear this is kind of the end. So what?
I mean, like you said, if you move beyond, which of course, when you get to the literal post credits and everything else, I mean, it's kind of hard to move beyond. But if you just look at the movie as a whole and not zero in on the fact that, oh, it's another movie that promises to be the last when we know it's not going to be the last. For the most part, I think it was effective as far as, like, since the highlight or the most effective thing in the movie is the Eddie Venom relationship. So having that kind of come dramatically to a close when neither one really wants to be separated from each other, that it really is a symbiotic relationship at this point, that, yeah, I think that's fairly effective. It's just the fact that, yeah, we objectively both know that we're going to see Venom again in some way, shape, or form. We're going to see symbiotes again in some way, shape, or form. And for better or for worse, we're going to get some kind of null storyline, which probably won't be any better than Gore the God Butcher. But I guess that's a low bar to clear, so maybe we will.
Yeah. Like I said, I thought this movie ended strangely. I thought there were moments of it that seemed a bit inconsistent within the movie itself, as well as within the franchise. I think it's obvious. I mean, just based on the fact that we got three of them, of course, that this is Sony's best outing. And I think based on your reporting in terms of the box office and everything we're hearing about, it's a good time to get out of the game. But is that a reflection of the audience's interest in continuing to see this story, or their ability to actually make it good on a consistent basis? I guess we'll not really know that answer, but I will say, I think for a symbiote fan like myself, there was a lot to eat throughout the trilogy. I do wish less of the symbiotes were just straight up fodder, which is basically every one of them except Venom and Carnage. And, you know, obviously even Carnage, you know, I suppose we have the option to see him again some point in the future, but Carnage, quote unquote, died at the end of his introductory film. So just kind of having the symbiotes reduced to a bunch of red shirts was kind of for me, for most of this trilogy. But also with our only prior representation really being Spider-Man 3, which actively pisses me off to this day. I think I'm happy with the trilogy overall. We get to see good, you know, for the most part. And I think even including in the first movie, there are problems with some of the characterization or of Venom. But like, I think we got to eat good enough as Venom fans with this trilogy, and maybe got more than we should have. But I also think it's cool how much they put Venom in, how much the fact that we got a trilogy, not just the first movie, but a trilogy, put the character of Venom and the symbiote family and characters like Null and stuff in the public zeitgeist. So like, that's, I mean, as a fan of a character, that's gotta be a win.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we would be killing for that for Green Lantern at this point.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it in theaters. I look forward to adding it to the Blu-ray collection.
Oh, Chad.
All right. Anything else?
Ever so briefly, as we close out, it kind of goes with the even though it doesn't really matter that it goes with the Halloween theme, just because by the time this comes out, Halloween's over. But as we recorded, Halloween is not over. I did watch the Netflix documentary on Zodiac. This is the Zodiac speaking, which was fairly interesting because the Zodiac case is fairly interesting on its own. And that's one of those few true crime things when I was a kid that freaked me out, probably because it was contemporary at the time. Because I watched it when it was in the late 70s. And of course, Zodiac's most of this, or the majority, I think, of the Zodiac killings were in the 70s. So this was kind of like a Jack the Ripper thing, except it was concurrent. So that would make sense that it was in the current time frame of when you were actually watching it. So I remember HBO had a special when I was a kid on Unsolved Mysteries. It wasn't just murder stuff, because they had like D.B. Cooper in it and Amelia Earhart and all the stuff. So it was disappearances and things, but they had the Zodiac thing towards the end. I think they were going in, I think they were going in chronological order. So that always freaked me out. So I've always kind of had an interest in that case. And I think the Fincher, I think that was his movie, the Zodiac movie with Robert Downey Jr. and Gyllenhaal and Ruffalo, was really, really good. I thought the documentary was pretty good. I just think that it's interesting how they have the framing device, because it's a family that knew the main suspect. So you get much more circumstantial evidence that supports the fact that this guy was Zodiac. But it's not like with a lot of these true crime things, or like any Bigfoot special, where you kind of always get hinted that it's going to be some kind of big reveal or some big discovery at the end. And 9.9 times out of 10, there's no smoking gun anywhere. But I still think it's interesting. It's nicely put together. So I think, and I think it would be worth checking out. And it's not short, which I like. I think all three episodes are like over 40 minutes. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Nice. I did not do any. Did you have any? What did Mark see?
That was my closest thing, because last week was Venom, so it couldn't have been.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anything new myself, although I did note on the way walking into the theater, obviously Piece by Piece is out, so I might go see that. I might have two relatively quick succession visits to the theater. Completely unheard of for me. But I do want to see it. Do you have any plans to see that in theaters?
No.
Okay. I might go see that. But I also saw the poster for Kraven. Interesting, we didn't see that trailer in front of this film.
We did, but I believe it wasn't. I think it was the first trailer. I don't think there was a second trailer, which I think they've done, but I'm pretty sure it was the. I think it was the first trailer. I didn't
see it in my showing.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange.
I did too. That would be that's the most strange thing of all, since it's a Sony movie. So you would think the one thing you would, and they did have, I assume they had Captain America on it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But Captain America and Kraven, you would think, would be the two slam dunks, because of what was, but no, for I guess not for you, but for me, they did have both. They did play Kraven. I still think it was the first trailer. But then again, it's been so long, maybe since I saw it, whatever they released after that, maybe it's I'm blurring them all, because they were similar trailers.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Should we tell them what's next or no? We have it scheduled, so it's up to you.
Nah, let's wait until it'll be actually. Let's just, because there's always a chance something will come up.
That's true. Also, I did receive in the mail and unboxed and recorded the unboxing of the 70th anniversary Funko Mystery Minis. I bought a case of 12, an untampered with case of 12 directly from, Funko. I got it from Big Bad Toy Store, but the box that it came in was a sealed box from Funko. So, untampered with a case of 12 of these 70th anniversary Godzilla mystery minis. And I filmed that unboxing. It has yet to be edited. It has yet to be exported and posted and so on and so forth. But if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, it'll be up soon. The only time I'm going to tell you when it's up is when it's up. So just subscribe to our YouTube channel, Lantern Cast Vids, because there should be a new video coming soon.
Excellent.
And if people want to reach out to us or find where we're at across various platforms, how do they do so?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #geocast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Lantern Cast Vids is the YouTube channel in question, of course, Chad was referring to. And last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.